This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar with Wong Xiaoning. Now, you may want to stay tuned to our show at 11:30 a.m. later. What do we have, Xiaoning?
Because how did Boost, initially a local homegrown e-wallet pioneer in Malaysia, grow beyond payments to now become a multi-million dollar full-spectrum fintech brand, not only locally, but across the Southeast Asia region?
What decisions did they make along their journey to make them become Malaysia's emerging fintech giant with a growing regional presence and a soon-to-be-launched digital bank that's primed to close the gap on financial inclusion? So join us in our first episode of our Boost Fintech series today at 11:30 a.m. as we speak with Shayanta Abekun, the group CEO of Boost, to find out more. And closer to home, a little bit, in half an hour, we have the Breakfast Grill, where Philip C. will be speaking to Sanjay Sharma, CEO of the Asia School of Business. What's he going to cover?
Well, he's going to cover whether education has changed post-pandemic. How is ASB actually really doing financially? And get a sense of where the future lies in executive education. Are MBAs still relevant? Do people really still care?
Well, when I spoke with the CEO of the business school in Singapore, there we go. I kept thinking IMF for some reason, because we are going to be talking
about
the IMF.
You do an MBA at INSEAD to work at the IMF. I think that's where you hope to go.
Well, INSEAD believes that business schools are still the way to go. But we'll hear what ASB says after this. Stay tuned for that conversation after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But yes, let's turn our attention over to the IMF. Because after almost a year of negotiations, Sri Lanka finally secured a $3 billion US dollar bailout from the IMF last week. The deal came after China, Sri Lanka's biggest bilateral creditor, agreed to restructure its loans to the country earlier this month. This is the 17th IMF bailout for Sri Lanka and the third since the country's decades-long civil war ended in 2009.
So President Ranil Wickremesinghe told Parliament last week that the first tranche of the $330 million US dollars was received. The government will continue to engage in restructuring talks with bilateral and private creditors to recover debt sustainability beginning the third week of April. Now, some background. Of course, we know the economy fell into crisis last year, resulting from a combination of factors. We had the pandemic, rising energy prices, populist tax cuts, and inflation of more than 50%.
Does this IMF bailout signal that the worst is over? And how will Sri Lanka rebuild its battered economy? For some insights on this, we speak to Dr. Chulani Atanayake, research fellow at the Institute of South Asian Studies of the National University of Singapore. Chulani, good morning. Thank you very much for joining us. So last Monday, Sri Lanka secured a much-anticipated loan of about $3 billion US dollars from the IMF. They've received the first tranche of over $300 million US dollars the same week. How necessary was it for the country to receive these funds, and what are they going to be used for?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's nice to be back. Well, this is extremely necessary. There's no doubt about it. This was this will provide some breathing room for the country's economic recovery for sure. So the this will bring expected to bring the foreign exchange to a comfortable level, build up our reserves, and help the forex to be available for normal economic activities such as importing necessary food and medicine, etc. Now, we saw some improvement of this even before the actual tranche came to the country, even before the bailout came to the country. Soon after the board approval, there was a significant improvement in Sri Lankan rupee, and that showed some confidence in the country's economy. So this will for sure boost forex reserve and will obviously help the economic recovery going forward.
Okay, but Chulani, I'm sure in order to get this IMF loan, the government did have to agree to some new terms.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know what those terms are?
Well, from what is available in the public domain, there has been some provisions, mostly in terms of like institutional structure reforms and debt restructuring. So they are focusing on revenue-based fiscal consolidation, improving fiscal institution, introducing cost-reflecting energy price in, because if you remember what happened last year, energy cost had been a major factor in the crisis. And obviously debt restructuring and then rebuilding reserve, pricing stability, financial sector stability, promotion of investment growth, et cetera, et cetera. So as I said, these are all, I think, targeted at institutional and structural reforms, which has been lagging in Sri Lanka for so many decades, which ended up in the crisis we saw last year. And this will definitely help the country and improve the confidence of other bilateral and multilateral lenders, especially like with World Bank and ADB, etc. Obviously, most of these reforms will bring difficulty for the public in the initial stage. So because of that, there should be necessary social safety net. And this is also a condition from IMF. So we have to wait and see how these are unfolding in the next couple of months.
Okay, so how the public reacts is going to be an important barometer moving forward. What's your sense of how the public views President Vikramasinghe at the moment? What's his public approval level like?
Well, any of these reforms are not popular. Mm. And I remember telling this last year at your program also, any leader who comes into power will go through tremendous amount of resistance from the, because none of these are popular choices. Mm. So obviously he's not very popular at the moment, and there's been a lot of resistance. I'm sure you saw in the news, there's been strikes going on one after the other, after tax introductions, and most recently after this proposal for privatization of state-owned enterprises. But I mean, these reforms are necessary for the country, and I'm sure, like, for the past so many years, the economists have repeatedly reiterated that these are the kind of reforms we want for a healthy economy. So even amid this difficult situation, amid growing unpopularity, I think that the government going ahead with these reforms are really good. I mean, they have some guts, at least in short term. Mm.
Okay, and if we look at President Vikramasinghe's power base, does it look very strong at the moment? Is there any credible opposition, in fact?
Well, Sri Lanka's political situation is not at its best, and it will continue to be so. There is constant questioning about his credibility. There has been back and forth with regard to election, going ahead with elections. With all that, it's not really in a strong place. Adding to that, as I said, the growing public disapproval, partly because of the reforms and their impact on the public immediately. For instance, now, with regard to energy cost stabilization, there was massive increase in tax for electricity, which obviously affect people. In terms of privatization of state-owned enterprises, the government has decided to go with three global companies as fuel distributors. And this has not received very well. On the other hand, government has also halted public sector recruitments. In Sri Lanka, public sector is huge. It's over 60% of the workforce. And people are used to having a government job. So they think it's their right. They have to have a government job. So with these kind of things, obviously, his popularity is declining. Not that he had a major popularity to begin with. Mm. But these are difficult reforms. I have said this repeatedly at several places, and I repeat it here as well. These are reforms necessary for the country, and anyone, not even somebody who is extremely popular, even if that person comes into power, even that person will go through the same kind of resistance, because people are not used to these kind of reforms in Sri Lanka, not to the kind of tax increase that we saw in the past from 12.5 to 33% is a huge leap. And so they are not used to those kind of things.
Sorry to interrupt, but in the little bit of time that we have about a minute left. Could you maybe just give us a quick picture of what life is like in Sri Lanka at the moment? Last year, we were talking about how they had to queue for fuel and staple foods were in short supply. Have conditions improved today?
I would say comparatively, it has improved. Mm. There is availability of commodities, staples, fuel. We see the fuel queues, but not for the same reason. Because there's a strike going on. We saw fuel queues in the past couple of days, but not for the same reason that we saw last year. The power cuts have reduced. In some areas, they don't have power cuts. This is a huge improvement from what we saw last year. But I don't say that we are at the best place. And also there is some improvement in terms of tourist arrivals. So there are some positivities from where Sri Lanka was in 2020 and where Sri Lanka is at the moment. So that gives me hope. And I hope that this will continue.
Chulani, thank you so much for speaking with us. That was Dr. Chulani Atanayake, Research Fellow at the National University of Singapore, giving us an overview of what's happening in Sri Lanka, especially since they've received the IMF bailout, some of the difficult decisions that the government has to take to put the economy back on the right track.
It's a tough part. The S&P Global Ratings, I think they say that Sri Lanka still faces a long road towards consolidation of its government balance sheet, consistent economic growth, and external stability. In fact, 2023 economy still expected the contract.
7:47 a.m. We're heading into some messages, but when we come back, who stands to benefit from the Alibaba restructuring? Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.